Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and you know she's got a special friend with her tonight. What do you
Who's
say? Dr. Richard Presser!
Oh! Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone.
Oh, good evening to you, Richard, and good evening to all of you out there who have tuned in tonight to listen to us. You know we love you dearly. And we look forward to this every week. And if you are on our mailing list, you know that tonight we have St. Francis of Assisi with us. And the reason we decided to call upon him this evening is because last week, if you recall, Hildegard was such a beautiful individual, bringing such wonderful information through. And she suggested that we talk to St. Francis tonight. And this we have done. Now, in case you are not familiar with St. Francis, I'd like to give you a few facts that came out of the encyclopedia. He probably is perhaps the best known for founding the Franciscan Brothers. And some of you might not be aware that he also started an order for women called the Poor Clares. And you might even know that St. Francis arranged for the first Christmas manger scene. In other words, he put together what we bring out every year as the Christmas manger. And he also carried the wounds of Yeshua. And that is called the stigmata, meaning he had the wounds on his hands and feet of the nail prints and the wounds around his head from the crown of thorns. And he was the first person to bear the wounds of Christ's passion. He's also known as the patron saint of animals. And they are just a few things about St. Francis that I wanted you to know about before we began. Now, St. Francis is known to us as having other lifetimes, and he's had many lifetimes upon this earth, and a few of them is he was Balthazar, and Balthazar was one of the wise men who came to the Christ child when he was born. And again, we bring out the statue of Balthazar every Christmas time in the manger scene also. He was known as Pythagoras, who was a great mathematician, a brilliant mind. And many of you know of Master Kuthumi. He was also a reincarnation of Master Kuthumi. Richard, did I miss any that's well known?
I don't think so. I think they're the key ones. I think you've hit the high spots.
Okay. And so we're going to explore some of these concepts about how people reincarnate and the connection between those different souls that come to Earth and that link to the master soul working with a thread, so to speak, of incarnations upon the earth. So we have a tremendous amount to talk to St. Francis. And those of you who listen to the show, you know that Richard tunes into the individual that we bring on board, so to speak. And when he does, he is, one of the things that he does is reads the individual's energies. In other words, each one of us as a soul has certain vibrations that are uniquely our own. And what I ask the people who are listening at this time, put your awareness into the third eye, in the center of the forehead, and also perhaps contemplate the structure that is in the heart area which is the heart center, comprised of the heart chakra, the beating heart, and the heart mind. This is a very powerful place. Think of these areas. See in the third eye a picture of what you recall as being Saint Francis. There's been much artwork about him, so you might use one of those pictures, a beautiful image of him sitting with the birds and the creatures of the forest. And so as you do this and you center yourself there, you should be able to pick up St. Francis vibrations as Richard describes them. So Richard, be kind enough to call in St. Francis. He's here.
He's been around a while.
Yeah, he's been around. He's anxious to be here and talk to these beautiful souls who listen to us on BBS Radio. And describe for our listeners the essence of his vibrations. What are you feeling?
There is essentially what I would call a love vibration. I've mentioned before that I experience individuals across this spectrum, if you will, from, in a way, either side of my heart center, really. And he is very central in my experience, very close to the heart area itself, maybe just fractionally to the left. This beautiful, clear, clean energy, unencumbered is a word I would use. Just this beautiful expression of love is how I experience him. Not in any way without power. There's a lot of strength to that love, and also a beautiful gentleness as well. It's how best I think I can describe him. It's a beautiful, clear energy, just very uncompromised in a sense. There's a simplicity and purity about it that's really very special.
Thank you, Richard. As you were describing his energy, I was thinking about some of the pictures of St. Francis and statues, for instance, where he shows that side of him, that gentleness, where there might be a bird perched upon his shoulder or sitting on his hand, or, you know, little creatures around his feet. And so this is a popular understanding among people, that this man had the gentleness about him where little creatures such as birds and bunny rabbits could come to this man without feeling any sort of danger. So that might be something that those who are listening feel about this. We spoke to St. Francis before this show, and he discussed some of the things that he wanted to bring forth in a message. And so, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to connect with him and receive his message for our listeners, I would be very happy.
Yes, let us see what he has to say. And he's here, and he is saying, "My dear friends, it is with great pleasure that I join you and the two of you that are bringing forth this message and this work tonight. It is an honor and a privilege because there are indeed very few opportunities for a being such as me that has crossed over, as you say, to come forth and be expressed in this beautiful, clear way. And so I truly value this opportunity. And I will say to you that history has presented me as, in a way, a very simple man, perhaps more accurately living a simple life. And indeed, that is so. Those of you who are aware of my history know that I was born into a relatively wealthy family. My father was in what you would call the rag trade today. not in the making of clothes, but indeed the handling of cloths. He was a merchant in that trade. And so he was what you might call quite well-to-do, and I did not lack for anything. As a child and as a young man, I was taught well, and I spoke both Italian and French in particular quite fluently, and indeed was aware of German and other languages. And so I was quite well educated, and you might say had every opportunity laid at my doorstep to live what you might call a wealthy traditional Italian life with nothing to want for. And as you know, this was not the path I chose, because indeed, as I have come to understand, I did not come to live that kind of life. Rather, I came, in a sense, to be an example, to be an example of what it meant to live a powerful spiritual life within the context of the Catholic Church. Indeed, there are some similarities between my path and the path of Hildegard that you brought forth last week, though there were differences. Hildegard, for the most part, stayed within what you might term the traditional confines of the path of the nun, although you may be aware she did challenge the traditional structure of things and was able to, you might say, take responsibility for her own property, if you will, which is unusual in that time. However, in my case, I walked a path which challenged the powerful hierarchy, if you will, within the Catholic Church, in the sense that it had become very wealthy and a very moneyed path, you might say. And it was very political. And the path that I walked was to shun those trappings of the Church, to indeed to connect with nature, to connect with the very basic elements of life, indeed to walk a path of poverty. And indeed it was a path that I consciously chose, to shun those trappings of success, not only of the life into which I had been born, but also the trappings of wealth that had become so much part of the Catholic Church in that time. And so I chose a path which shunned these things and in my own way reawakened a very direct spiritual connection with Yeshua and indeed his teachings. Even though I made that connection with his teachings, I operated, albeit somewhat loosely, within the confines of the Catholic Church, because, as you may understand, to step outside of those boundaries in some very aggressive way meant that you would become subject to the disciplines of the Inquisition, which, as you would understand, was very powerful in my time. And it is not that I consciously avoided that in a sense. I was on some level guided to walk the path that I did, which on one level confronted the trappings of the Catholic Church and yet in another acknowledged its spiritual roots from within the Church. And yes, there were many who were threatened by the path that I walked and wanted to have me excluded from the Church. However, the Pope of the time recognized the true spiritual basis of what I was doing and the fact that I was not walking a path which was contrary to the fundamental teachings of the Catholic Church. Rather, I was walking a path which, in a sense, confronted the wealth and the dogma in the sense of the political processes of the Church. And so you might say I fashioned my own path in the world. And you can look at the path that I walked as one of powerful leadership, though at the time I did not see it like that. I simply walked where I felt I was guided to walk, and I would have walked it alone if that had been how events unfolded. But in fact, there were those who were drawn to join me from many walks of life. And as history shows, I built a powerful group of monks, the Franciscan monks, and also founded, with that one history knows is clear, that group for women. And you might say it was not because I set out to form those groups. They simply coalesced because individuals were drawn to the qualities of what I represented, the purity of the spiritual stance where I stood. And there were many that were confronted by the path that we walked. As I said, we shunned the riches. We walked the path of poverty, and we essentially lived on what was given to us, what was donated to us. And we spent quite a bit of time rebuilding some broken down churches. And these, in essence, became our homes for the most part as we started on that journey. And I do not wish to build something self-important, you might say, out of the journey that I walked. I simply wanted to share with you a little of the sense of what that journey was like and some sense of how and why I was drawn to that path. It was as if I was internally guided to walk that path, and I now understand that indeed that was so, though as it began I did not understand how or why this was happening. I just knew that it was a path that I must walk, and so I walked it. And indeed my life was very much like that. I simply did what I felt compelled to do. You might say I chose to be guided from within from quite an early age, to follow my intuitive sense of what was so, and to connect with the beauty of life, the beauty of nature, the simplicity and yet the complexity of those simple things, such as the plants and the animals and the birds and so on. And indeed, the essential simplicity of what it means to be a human being. There is both a simplicity and a complexity about being a human being. And it is so easy for us all to clutter that simplicity with all of the trappings of what some term success in the world, when really the spiritual path is about none of that. And in your time, those trends have accelerated and intensified. And so they are perhaps more powerful now than they ever were. But you, dear ones, live in a time where this is about to change, where these trends towards humanity seeking to find themselves through the trappings of wealth and success in the world will essentially come to an end. You have already begun to see some of the breakdown of the economic and financial systems in your world, and have also begun to see a growing level of earthquake and volcanic activity in your world. And this will continue to accelerate over the next year or so, aided and abetted by the sunspots that have been coming forth. And I am drawn to mention something to you in regard to the sunspots which are currently active upon the sun. What most of humanity does not recognize is that energies come forth to influence humanity from the sun. And indeed, it is an important path by which the energies that come from all there is, the creator of all in the center of the cosmos, come to the planet. Some of you are aware that at this time there is a very direct route for energies via what is known as the Eye of Isis, where there are energies being directed to the planet directly from the center of the cosmos. However, the path via the sun remains very important. And there are indeed beings from, you might say, other planets, other places in the cosmos who are acting in support of humanity at this time. And they indeed are guiding energies coming from the center of the cosmos through to your sun and working with that one that you know of as Father God, who resides behind your sun, to fashion energies to come through to your beautiful planet. And I wanted to mention this to you because at the moment that I speak to you, there is a very active process at work with what you might call extraterrestrials, whatever that term means, because all of you are truly extraterrestrials in your origins. But for the purposes of understanding, I will use that term. There are ETs that are working very actively to ensure that clear energies are coming to Earth as we speak. The sunspots, which have been active for the last two or so weeks and will be for the next month or two, are carrying a tremendous amount of focused energy. Focused energy which is assisting the preparation of the planet and indeed of humanity and indeed fostering the coming forth of rejuvenation upon the planet so that the necessary preparations for what is about to unfold can be undertaken. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to mention this to you because it is unlikely that there will be other paths by which this information will come to you. And so I take the opportunity of this moment to share this information with you. But there is another link that I wish to make between my time and your time, and that is the issue of leadership. Although I did not understand that, in a way, I displayed powerful leadership in my life, in the sense that I became clear what my path was, and so I walked that path almost without fear or favor, without really being distracted from it by anything. And in a way, it was the power of that stand which led others to join me and indeed others to contribute what was necessary for our survival. Because as I have mentioned, we lived essentially in poverty and did nothing directly to generate the resources to survive. But they came and they arrived. And it really came forth because people were inspired by my leadership, my willingness to take a stand for what I felt to be true in the world. And that stand inspired others to step. And I will take the opportunity to mention something that some of you I know are aware of and some of you may not be, and that is that these two that are hosting this call have also taken a stand of leadership. As you may know, they have been working long and hard to bring forth rejuvenation upon this planet because it is a key step in preparing for the process of ascension. It is necessary to reclaim essentially the state of being that existed before the fall in Atlantis, albeit in this new physical form, before that time of ascension. And in that time, the physical body did not age and it carried a perfection. And so to reclaim that state, in a sense, the process of rejuvenation of the physical body and indeed bringing forth perfection in that physical body are necessities for that process. These two have worked long and hard and have felt that they have been unsupported by those of the light on the other side. And so they have taken a stand that either this changes or they will completely discontinue their work. And they have begun that just today. They have closed one of their websites, and they will continue to close a website each day until rejuvenation comes forth or their entire activities are shut down, because they recognize this must come forth now if humanity is to prepare. And I wanted to take the opportunity to make the link between the leadership that I displayed in my lifetime and the leadership that these two have chosen to display in this time. I'm sure they do not want your praise for this any more than I wanted praise from those around me at the time. It is simply taking the step that you feel it is yours to take. And so I wish to take this moment to acknowledge them also in taking their stance as they feel guided to do. And so these are the key things that I wished to share with you in my message today. And I welcome questions from Carolyn and indeed from anyone else who wishes to call in when Carolyn is willing to take your calls. And so it is.
And so it is. And we thank you, St. Francis, for this beautiful information. As I was reading some of your history, you have touched upon it. You devoted yourself and was inspired to the life of poverty, and you were supplied everything that you needed, even though you did move away from finances. And the other thing that comes to mind is how close you were to that one that we know of as Yeshua. The rule of the Franciscans, according to the article that I am reading, was to follow the teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ and to walk in his footsteps. According to this, that was the Franciscan rule. You, as I mentioned earlier, brought forth the scene of the Nativity and was the first one, according to this, to receive the stigmata, the wounds of Yeshua. And knowing what I do know, that you were also Balthazar, one of the three wise men that visited the infant when he was born, I had some questions surrounding this. Apparently, your soul, your monad, had this connection with Yeshua. This life, as St. Francis certainly did emulate so much of his teachings, so much of what he was. Can you give us and our listeners some input about this, this strong connection to that one known as Yeshua?
As you know, that one you know of as Yeshua is an aspect of that great soul known as Marietta. Marietta is the soul that was the first soul created after the seraphim and cherubim angels. And if you understand how creation is structured, the seraphim surround all there is in the center of the cosmos, and they reflect back love to all there is, and in a sense sustain a balance for all there is as his energies are sent forth, or aspects of his energies are sent forth for the purposes of creation. The cherubim, apart from monitoring vibration and taking care of the Akashic records, actually are responsible for setting up the vibration and sustaining the vibration that is responsible for the context within which all creation exists. In other words, all of creation, in a sense, is an expression of vibration in some form. And so you might say the cherubim were responsible for setting up the framework for creation. And beyond that, then, there is the creation process itself. And some of you are aware that creation occurs in cycles, cycles of Brahma, as they are known in your parlance. And that one that you know of as Marietta carries the power and the authority and the responsibility to open and close those cycles of Brahma. And as such is a being of great power and carries many, many soul particles to be able to undertake that powerful and important role. And so that one you know of as Yeshua is an aspect of Marietta. And indeed, Marietta has had a powerful direct role in the creation of your galaxy, and indeed a very direct role in the creation of your solar system and planet because of the important roles that they play in the unfolding of many events, particularly at this time. And indeed, my monad was created not long after that monad you know of as Marietta. And I have, or that is, my monad in many guises has acted in service of Marietta on so many levels. And so it is no surprise, therefore, that indeed I played an important role as Balthazar in support of Yeshua in that lifetime. And indeed, some of you understand that I was also the grandfather of Mary Magdalene in that time. And so my connections to that mission were indeed very close. And as some of you will understand, I was one of the magi in that time. That term comes forth within the Bible referring to the kings that came forth to greet the newborn Yeshua. And indeed, we were magi, but few truly understand who and what the magi were. And the tradition of the magi were as a group of beings that sustained many of the skills and abilities and understandings, and indeed in some cases technologies from Atlantis, and carried them forth through time. And so as one of the magi in that time, much of my knowledge and wisdom and understanding was transferred to my daughter of that time, known as Mary of Magdala, who indeed was Mary Magdalene's mother, and who was Yeshua's first teacher. So there were great connections in that lifetime. And so, as you can see, it is no surprise that in that lifetime as St. Francis, I indeed felt a very strong connection with that one you know as Yeshua. And yes, there were there were limitations as to the nature of his teachings and his understandings that I was able to bring forth within the context of the Catholic Church, because, as you understand, there was so much distortion of what had been taught by Yeshua to his followers and the path that the Catholic Church had walked. But indeed, the path that I walked, I came to understand, was a powerful attempt to bring as much as possible of those fundamental teachings, that going within, that fundamental following of that inner guidance, to bring that forth within the context of the Catholic Church and to anchor it as best as I was able within that context. And so this was actually a key part of my mission in that time, though It was not, in a direct sense, a conscious awareness. Rather, I simply followed the guidance that came forth. It is only in hindsight, since I have crossed over, that I have truly held the context that I'm now sharing with you.
Thank you, St. Francis. I wish to explore this some more about the monad and the aspects that are sent to Earth and how they are all connected to one another. But before we move to that, I'm going to take a question from Jean from Missouri on line one. Hello, Jean. Jean. She must have hung up. I can hear
you. I'm here.
I'm ready to move on. I'm glad you spoke up. What is your question?
Yes, I wanted to say hi to St. Francis and thank him for always watching over my animals, because I know he's always there for me. And ask him, can he instruct us on how to make things physical from the black energy like Jesus did with the loaves and the fishes?
When you say, you mean the background energy? In other words, when Yeshua brought forth, when he created it, how he did it perhaps, or give some instruction as to how to do it. Is that your question?
Yes, and he understands that I have a lot of animals I have to feed all the time, so I'm always looking for the loaves and the fishes to multiply.
Okay, so is what you're... The thought behind this is you have a lot of animals, if I'm understanding this, and you want to know how to multiply the feed.
I think if we could learn how to do that, we could learn how to feed the world.
I like that idea. Richard, does St. Francis understand this? And if he does, what input can he give us?
I believe he understands it. Let's see what he has to say. Few understand the training that Yeshua went through in his lifetime prior to his mission. The time that he spent with the Druids as a youth, he went to Britain with his uncle Joseph when he was some 13 years of age and spent several years there. And he subsequently spent some 7 or so years in India, in particular studying with Babaji, but indeed also with several other individuals. And so he learnt many great skills, many great abilities, which most people, for the most part, in this lifetime have not gained access to, and in the current consciousness will not readily gain access to. There have been individuals in this time that have mastered the ability to visualize what they wish to see and bring it forth from the formless. But let me say to you, that is a rare, rare skill in this lifetime, and it has been done by individuals who have come forth in this lifetime with that very clear intention of doing so. But what I would say to you is that it is an issue which will, in a sense, dissolve with what is in your near future. It will dissolve with the coming forth of the process of ascension, because so many abilities of the human being will be reactivated by the ascension process. And your ability to bring forth food for your animals and indeed food for yourself, housing for yourself, whatever you wish to see in the physical will rapidly develop once the ascension process is completed in early 2013. And so I do not feel it is productive to try and explain this to you now, because it is challenging to put all of the pieces in place from what I might call a standing start in the current consciousness. However, the opportunity to do that readily and easily for all of humanity and to break this hold that this whole economic structure that exists in your world has over everyone will just dissolve, because you will not need to work. You will not need to spend your time in some venture, some process, some employment which generates the money you need to buy the physical items that you need to survive. You will simply manifest these things from the background energy, just as Yeshua demonstrated, and just as indeed some of the great yogis today demonstrate. So I do not have a short answer for you, a quick solution for you between now and the end of 2012, but my solution will be very much in place for you not too long after that time.
Well, there, yay. Thank you, St. Francis, and there you have it. Not much help in the moment, but certainly in the near future. Thank you for your question, Jean.
Thank you. There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Indeed. And now we have Maria on line two. Maria.
Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Maria. Hello.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Maria.
Well, I'm able to get, to you. And this is beautiful. Thank you to St. Francis. I have just one question. Understanding how important it is, the rejuvenation process, what can St. Francis give us to help in any way to make this come through?
There are many elements that have needed to be in place for the rejuvenation process to emerge for humanity. Most of you do not understand the path that these two leading this call have had to walk in order to prepare for that coming forth. However, that complex and difficult preparation work is, from my perspective, complete. And so it is really up to these two individuals and to those who are, or at least have begun to provide support to them, to sustain the current stance. And in my view, that is sufficient to lead to the coming forth of the rejuvenation process as it has long been planned. The stance that has been taken both by some key individuals on the other side in support of these two, and also the stance that they have taken, saying enough is enough, this needs to change. This combination, in my view, is all that is required to see the process come forth. And I will add, a little to what I said earlier about the importance of this process. Humanity is moving not only to the level of consciousness and ability that was held prior to the fall in Atlantis, but indeed going beyond it. And the experience of the human body aging and coming to the end of a lifetime in, say, 80 or so years is just a phenomenon which has existed since the fall in Atlantis some 13,000 years ago. It was not the human experience prior to that, because the physical body did not age as you experience it. And part of the reason that this was introduced was because of the nature of this difficult consciousness, that if an individual made choices in a given lifetime that led that individual into a difficult situation, in a sense, it was only for a limited time. If you are living in your linear time experience and have chosen a difficult path, 60 or 80 years can seem a long, long time indeed, but in the scheme of the life of the monad, indeed it is very, very short. However, part of the reason, as I say, that this was introduced was to limit the length of such an experience, that the end of the life would precipitate the end of that experience, and the monad, if you will, could gather its resources and return. And so, in the time of Atlantis, there was a much greater awareness by the individual as to who and what they were. The individual sustained an active connection with its creator. That communication was continuous, and indeed the ability to connect with inner skills and abilities and wisdom and all of the wisdom of the monad was simply part of the human experience. And because there is that return, if you will, not only to the level of Atlantis but beyond it, as I said earlier, there is a need to reclaim the essential elements of that human experience prior that existed prior to the fall. And so the rejuvenation process will bring forth a perfected, rejuvenated form of the physical body, plus it will trigger some key preparation of that physical body for what it is about to go through as it passes through the ascension process. This is programmed into the physical body of every human being upon the planet. And so this is a very necessary and important step, a step that you, outside of the conversations from these two in this manner and those that have come forth in support of them in this way, very little that you will have heard about upon the planet. But it is a necessary part of what is unfolding. And so, to come back to your question, it is my view that the key steps that need to be put in place to see this unfold have already been taken. And so it is.
Thank you, St. Francis. And was that helpful to you, Maria? I mean, yes Maria.
Yes. Thank you very, very much. Thank you to you and Richard and also to St. Francis.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Maria.
And we have another caller from Arizona. JC is on line 3. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I have two questions here.
Okay.
And can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. So the first question is to know if Saint Francis has experienced ascension during his lifetime.
Let's ask him that first and then to the second one. Richard, in case you didn't hear it, the caller wants to know if Saint Francis experienced ascension in that lifetime.
Ah, okay. I did not experience ascension in that lifetime. Ascension, as it is truly meant, is both the soul and the physical body moving to a higher dimension together. And I left my physical body at the end of that lifetime.
Okay. Thank you. Now, second question, JC.
Yeah, the second question is to know if somehow there is a relationship between St. Francis and Padre Pio.
Okay, you want to know the relationship between St. Francis and Padre Pio? Is that the question?
Yes, ma'am. That's the question.
Relationship in what sense? They weren't living during the same time. Or are you asking,
right,
was he an incarnation of...
Right. Precisely, because both,
okay,
from what I understand,
okay,
have a stigmata on their hand and head.
Yeah.
Yeah, this caller is seeing some similarity between the lifetime of St. Francis and Padre Pio. And so he's asking St. Francis if he was an incarnation that was known as Padre Pio, who, by the way, was also another individual who carried the stigmata.
There have been several souls that have come forth over time that have displayed the stigmata. And to my knowledge, there has not been an example where those souls have come forth from a common monad. In other words, it has been individuals that have come forth to display those characteristics as part of their experience. However, they have not arisen from the same monad in any case that I am aware of. And so you can take from my answer that Padre Pio was not an aspect of the same monad as I was or am.
Thank you, St. Francis. And there are the answers to your question, JC. Thank you for calling them in and asking.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. While we're talking about aspects, we have about 4 minutes, Richard, not much time. I have so many questions.
Goodness.
Yeah, the hour went by so fast, and I have so many questions of St. Francis. We haven't even really gotten into them. We're going to have to ask him to come back another time, and I don't know if we have even enough time to answer this question. I was going to ask him about aspects. Can we describe what an aspect of a monad is in a minute or two?
I'm sure. Let's see what he has to say. In simple terms, the monad is the soul as it was created by all there is in the center of the cosmos. And just as all there is not capable of moving from the center of the cosmos without upsetting the balance of things, so too each monad is very limited in how far it can move and in what dimensions it can move to. And so just as all there is created those souls, those monads, to go forth and experience and to create the cosmos and so on, so too the monad sends forth aspects of itself to experience within creation. And so when a monad decides to incarnate on Earth, for example, it sends just a few particles of itself to incarnate as that soul, as that individual on Earth. And so an aspect is simply that collection of particles, if you will, that have been sent forth to be that soul in that lifetime.
Thank you so much for your explanation. People need to know about reincarnation, because I think some individuals think the exact same person comes each time, but yet, as you explain it, and as I have come to understand, there are different particles from the monad that come each time, and that is how they're related to one another.
That is correct.
We would like to thank you, St. Francis, and with your willingness, if you would come again, we certainly would appreciate it.
It would be my honor to join you on another occasion, if you so desire.
We would. And we would like to thank you also, Richard, for doing this magnificent work for us. We have 3 minutes. Is there anything that you would like to add to tonight's show or to information in general? Or what might be on the drawing board? I don't know. 3 minutes, love. What do you care to share with us during these last 3 minutes?
Oh, man. This focus has really taken a lot of energy from me.
So maybe you don't have anything to say during these last 3 minutes?
There's nothing bubbling over. I have to say the greatest focus of all for me in this time is to see rejuvenation come forth to assist humanity to move forward. Nothing is more important to me than that. And I will say to all of you out there, all of the things that we do, all of the products and services that we have out there to generate some income so that we can survive and do the work that we need to do. None of that gets on the rating scale as far as I'm concerned when it comes to what we are here to do, which is to assist humanity to prepare for this exquisite time. I would give it all away tomorrow if we could bring that forth. Nothing is more important than that.
Yes, thank you, Richard. And he and I are definitely devoted to that. And in closing, I just want to say something real quick during the last minute. Richard talked about the energy that it takes to do what he is doing tonight. And I want all of you to become aware that when I read Akashic Records or I work with a soul on these levels, and what Richard does takes a tremendous amount of energy. People do not realize the energy that it takes if you're not doing this work. And especially if you are doing the work and bringing it in its purest form and standing aside, putting your personality aside and connecting with that individual, there is a tremendous amount of focus, a tremendous amount of energy that it takes. And I just wanted to tell people that, Richard, because you do such a magnificent job.
Thank you, Carolyn.
And to, you going to say something else?
Yes, and I was going to say thank you to St. Francis for coming forth and working with us tonight, and to thank all of you, our audience, that have joined us tonight, both directly here and also those that will listen to the recording, because we do this for you, for your understanding, for your growth, in a sense, so that you too can open up further the understanding of who and what you are and why you are here on this planet at this time.
Yes, and I extend my love and understanding to all of the beautiful beings that are out there listening to us. And so until next week, this is Carolyn Evers and
Richard Presser.
We'll be back again, dear friends. Good night.
Bye for now.